Welcome. Thank you for coming. Today we're going to talk about the implementation of an EMR system in the immunization clinics in New York City. And Dr. Mark Meisner, who's the Director of Clinical Services for New York City, would be giving the presentation if he were here. He sends his love. He wishes he could be here, but due to budget constraints and whatnot, he's not allowed to be here. So I'm happy to be here in his place. So some background. New York City Bureau of Immunization does what you would think a Bureau of Immunization would do. I know we have a lot of immunization program managers, immunization registry managers here. We got Emily and Mary Beth and Frank, and I'm sure there's more. So they do clinical services at five different immunization clinics, one for each of the five boroughs in New York City. They have mobile outreach teams, an immunization registry. They do surveillance of vaccine preventable disease and a lot more. Today we're going to be talking about immunization clinics, of course. I'm a project manager with HLN Consulting. We provide public health IT consulting services to the Bureau of Immunization since 1997, and we developed the electronic medical record system that's used by the BOI clinics, and we've been supporting the immunization registry for more than 10 years now, and we've done a number of other things for them as well. So the patients that have been treated by the BOI clinics, in 2010 there were 65,000 patients at the five different clinics. A quarter of them are children between the ages of 4 and 18. They do not treat children under the age of 4. And the other three quarters are adults. They offer 11 different types of immunizations, including but not limited to all the immunizations that you would need in order to be permitted to attend school in the New York City school system. They are very serious about you being up to date, and if you're not, if you don't have at least what they call the provisional five, you cannot enter school. Also, they give a lot of flu vaccines starting right about this time of year, and then there's some others in there as well, such as pneumococcal polysaccharide. So BOI suffered from the challenges of paper-driven clinic operations, which we may know about, incomplete, inaccurate records once the paper form doesn't force you to fill it out and allows you to enter things like February 31st, which is a non-existent date. And even if the records are complete and accurate, they're of limited use if they're not accessible, which they weren't terribly accessible. We also had some inconsistent health care for patients. There's one nurse on staff at each of the clinics at all times, and then there's the remainder are lay vaccinators who have a public health associate certification. And they do go through a lot of training and education, and they do a very good job, and they work very hard at what they do. But in some circumstances, one lay vaccinator might have treated a certain unusual case differently than another lay vaccinator would have treated it. And when you work in New York City and you have 65,000 patients, you do run into some unusual cases. We also had failure to leverage patient data in the immunization registry because it's paper-based. So you have this weird and frustrating situation where the clinics are operated by the Bureau of Immunization, in which the immunization registry sits, and all of the providers in New York City are required to report immunizations for all children under the age of 18. Over 18, it's optional with consent for adults. And yet there's no access. I shouldn't say that. There is some access. At some of the clinics, they did have computers where you could do a search on the online, what they call the online registry, which is the web-based interface to the immunization registry. And they also did have another interface to DataLine, which was their system into which the paper records were loaded, the paper records being for their own clinics. So the immunization registry was the private sector, and the data line was the their own clinics. And they had a mix in terms of whether or not staff would actually look in two different systems in addition to writing up the paper report and dealing with whatever yellow cards the patient brought in. So this is not a very good situation, and that's was something that was plaguing the operation of the clinics. Also, it was a little difficult to monitor and supervise the clinic operations, and maybe they didn't. Part of the reason is because the nurses and so forth, the supervisors, would get dragged into doing a lot of the immunization and the screening because they're so busy. And so then it's hard for them to be maintaining some kind of situational awareness of what's going on at their clinics. And then it's impossible for Dr. Mark Meisner at the headquarters to have any sense of what's going on, because he doesn't want to be calling the clinics to say, hey, what's going on? Because they're going to be saying, I'm on the phone talking to you. I should be in the other room, you know, doing some immunizations and screening. So BOI responded by migrating from paper to an EMR system. They implemented a completely custom-developed EMR. That's what they asked us at HLN Consulting to do, and we tailored that specifically to the business process and rules that were used by the BOI clinics. So we didn't have to deal with diabetes management or smoking cessation or anything like that, completely and totally focused on immunizations. And I think running an immunization clinic has a lot of similarities from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, but to the extent that there were any idiosyncrasies in New York City, we were able to embrace them, right, and develop a system that exactly met their need and didn't have to worry, because this was not a system that was being, you know, shrink-wrapped and sold in other markets. It was deployed at the first clinic in February 2010 and then the last clinic in September 2010. So the expected benefits of the EMR-driven clinic operations were realized. That's the good news. So you would expect that the data validation would lead to more complete and accurate records, because it says, this is a required field, you can't continue. February 31st doesn't exist, try again. And through the extensive clinical decision support that was built into the system, which I'll talk about more later, they did get consistent, high-quality patient care. Integration with the immunization registry was achieved, so the EMR system talks directly to the CIR, the Citywide Immunization Registry. So now you have access to the patient's consolidated immunization history, and therefore you can use that data to make recommendations, which was very nice. And then we were also able to build a dashboard for real-time situational awareness of what's going on in the clinics, which is good for the supervisors, and it's even better for Dr. Meisner, who's off-site, who had no capacity to do supervision before. And then there's reports for after the fact to see, you know, what happened today or what happened last week. Okay, so that's kind of what you would expect. But then came additional challenges, and so that's really kind of the focus of this talk is, you know, after they built the EMR to solve those problems that they knew they had, they received a pile of new problems, right? And so the question is, how did the EMR deal with the new problems? So the new problems were like the hammer and the anvil. They got squeezed between an increasing demand for services. So due to the poor economy, you have people getting laid off or losing their insurance. You have more uninsured people. You also have immigration, a lot of immigrants moving into New York City, and so the population increase. And so from 2006 to 2010, the total volume increased from 44,000 to 66,000. So that's almost a 50% increase in just 4 years. And the big spike in 2009, of course, is for the H1N1. Now, at the same time you got the increased needs, you know, guess what? You got a shrinking capacity to supply services. So they lost 9 of 29 permanent staff, no budget to hire new staff, reducing from 5 clinics to 3 clinics. One of them was due to both the budget, loss of budget, and also building renovations. Fortunately, the Staten Island clinic is not being shut down. It's just being taken over by Health and Hospital Corporation. So that leaves them with just now 3 clinics, one each in Brooklyn, Queens, and Bronx. And they have no mobile outreach teams anymore in 2009-10 season and the 2010-2011 season. And those mobile outreach teams were really for delivering flu and pneumococcal polysaccharide. They would go out to senior citizen homes and churches and whatnot and deliver during the flu season those types of immunizations. So the last two seasons they weren't able to do that, both due to budget problems and also to just not as great of a turnout as they would have hoped. I guess they weren't getting, you know, bang for the buck in terms of what they were putting into it. So the question then is, has the migration from paper to EMR enabled BOI to do more with less, right? So you're always being told, do more with less. Can we do more with less, right? So that's the question. you know. And the ship had sailed before all this happened, right? They planned for doing the MR. So it's too late now, right? We're going to find out. Were they able to do more with less? So we divided it up into two questions. Did using the MR increase the number of immunizations per patient encounter? That's the doing more part. And so we're not looking at just the total number of immunizations or the total number of patients. We're looking at the number of immunizations per patient because that is a way of really doing more, but it's also a way of doing better, right? So it's not just about doing more. We also want to do better. And if you give the patient the shots that they need now, right, because they come in for a flu shot, but then you discover they're deficient in all these other things and you load them up with five shots, right, and they're like, you know, sore and got all the Band-Aids and walking out of the clinic, now they don't have to come back in a month and 2 months and 3 months later. So now you're saving yourself from that load that you would have incurred later on, right? You're kind of taking all that demand and compressing it. And then the other question is, did using the MR decrease the cycle time for patient encounters? Cycle time is the time between when they check in at the waiting room and with the receptionist to the time when they receive their shots and walk out the door. They don't actually walk out the door. They're supposed to sit and wait for 15 minutes to see if they pass out, but that's when we stop counting the cycle time. So that's the doing with less part. So the answer is yes, there was a 25% increase in average immunizations per patient encounter, and yes, there was a 12% decrease in average cycle time. So that's great, right? We're doing more and better with less. And so the rest of this now is about how we measured that and why did this happen. So measuring the average immunizations per patient encounter in the pre-EMR days, the clinic supervisor would manually tally the patient's immunizations at the end of every day. And they would even break it down by immunization. And then they would do a tally of the daily tallies at the end of the week and a tally of the weekly tallies at the end of the month and a tally of the monthly tallies at the end of the quarter and a tally of the quarterly tallies at the end of the year. So they really enjoyed that. That they felt that was a great use of their time, and they were really upset when we delivered the EMR system that would calculate it all for them as a report. That's sarcasm. So the average immunizations per encounter in the 2009 year were 1.6, and in the post-EMR period, we looked at the 12 months from July 1st, 2010 to... I messed up the dates there, but that's from July 2010 through June 30th of 2011. It increased to 2 immunizations per patient encounter. And that was very easy to calculate because you just created a database. That's a 25% increase over the pre-EMR period. And then if you break it down by type, so for the adults that was a 13% increase, and for the children it was a 29% increase in average immunizations per encounter. And then you have the measurement of the average cycle times. So pre-EMR days, they did a study in 2007, 17-day period during the school rush period. They call it the school rush period because what happens after Labor Day is all the parents start freaking out because their children were denied entry to school because they didn't have the immunizations they needed. So they all run to the immunization clinics to get the immunizations that they need so they can put the kids back in school. So it's a very busy, crazy time. Worst-case scenario measurement. So they put on-site surveyors there, and for every fifth patient, they do just like at Disney World, where they hand you like a little red card as you're starting your little trek through the ride, and then as you come out, and they write down the time that you went in, and then when you come out, they look at the number on your card, and they write down the time, and so they know the in and out time for every fifth patient. And they did that over that 17-day period for, I think it was like 1,300 patients. The average cycle time was 70 minutes over all the clinics. The slowest clinic, there's a wide variation here. So the slowest clinic was 94 minutes. The fastest clinic was 33 minutes, right? That's a big range. And that had a lot to do with the volume, and in particular, the volume of children. So the clinics that had the highest volume and the most children have the longest cycle times. Now, when you look at post-EMR period, we looked at the exact same 17-day period. We just queried the database because it records exactly when you checked in and exactly when you checked out, and it also records a couple things in between. So we looked at that, and there was a 12% decrease overall from 70 minutes to 62 minutes. And then even more importantly was the slowest clinic, right? That's the one where you really want to drive down the average cycle times, and they did drive it down by 24%. Now, the fastest clinic time actually increased from 30 minutes to 33 minutes to 33.7 minutes. So that was a 2% increase, but you know that's not of really any concern, and it was probably due to the fact that you know, the volume there was just so much lower than the other clinics. Now, keep in mind that this is 3 years later, and think back to that diagram where you saw how the volume increased over a three-year period. So the cycle time decreased by 12%, despite the fact that the volume was getting worse or increasing. So the conclusion was, yes, you can do more with less. The administration of more immunizations per patient encounter reduced the need for future encounters. It also improves the patient's health sooner. The shorter cycle time will allow the fixed number of staff to serve more patients per day. And it's, of course, improved patient satisfaction and staff morale. So what is it about the EMR that led this to happen, the more immunizations per encounter? So for every patient encounter, this EMR system uses an immunization algorithm that's based on the ACIP standards. It's the same algorithm that's built into the CIR, you know, citywide immunization registry that they've been using for years. They have a team of three people in the Bureau of Immunization who are subject matter experts who make the decisions about how to implement the rules coming at ACIP. We have a subject matter expert from HLN who participates in that. And now we also have Dr. Mark Meisner from the clinical services side. So we have five different people focused on this, and it's a very good algorithm. It's 59 pages long, and it makes your head spin. Now, in addition to that, so that's why we're pushing the immunizations. It's because of this algorithm, and we're no longer relying on the staff's kind of imperfect knowledge of this complicated algorithm. We also record refusal reason, and that's a mandatory field. So if somebody doesn't want it, if the system says, please, you know, says to the staff member, offer this to the patient, and if the patient says no, you have to record the reason why they said no. So the staff member is not going to just kind of willy-nilly skip the question, because they're not going to, you know, they're not going to lie. They're not going to put in a fake answer, right? They're going to talk to the patient. They're going to make the recommendation they're supposed to and record the refusal reason. Now, why is there a shorter cycle time for patient encounters? If the patient's ever been immunized at a BOI clinic or by a New York City provider, then the EMR is going to find that data in either the data that was submitted the last time they were at the clinic or in the data that was submitted to the registry. So now you don't have to put in the first name, the middle name, the last name, the address, immunization history, and you can have a lot of immunization history. And when you get to the vaccinating room, now the vaccinators no longer need to write out the lot number, the expiration date, the manufacturer, the injection site, the VIS dates. Instead, you usually only have to choose two droplet choices. And in a number of cases, those will already be defaulted for you. So you don't have to do anything except look at it and, you know, make sure that it's correct. We also streamlined, you know, the streamlined electronic workflow is also a reason why the cycle times are short. Because this was customized to mirror the business processes that were utilized by the clinics, everything goes kind of smoothly. We didn't take a system off the shelf and say, here, try and make this fit. Before we built the system, myself, one of our analysts, and two of our developers, and a user interface designer, all of us went out with one of their mobile outreach teams, and we also went to one of their clinics, and we went through the whole process, you know, filled out, you know, except for the shot. At the very end, we chickened out. But we could have got one if we wanted. So we followed through, and we you know, made sure we mirrored the process that the clinics used. And the way what the process is that they have the three stations. They have the waiting room where you check in with the receptionist, and if the receptionist, you know, might send you out to get like a pregnancy test or something before, and then ask you to come back, may or may not happen. After your the waiting room and your number is called, then you go into a screening room, and you give them all your demographic information and figure out what musicians you're going to be getting. And then that piece of paper, when it, in the old paper days, used to get carried, it used to precede you and get put in a little bin that was attached to the door of the vaccinating room, right? And then you would sit in the hallway waiting until the vaccinator was ready. They picked out the piece of paper, read off your name, and called you in. So now we had to mirror that, right? So we electronically hand off from the screening room to the vaccinating room. And there's no longer any paperwork to shuffle from room to room, to collate, to organize. No multiple staff signatures, no staff signatures at all right now. And the EMR also keeps the patients in the proper position in the electronic queue, so patients don't like leapfrog other patients due to accidental shuffling or anything like that. So now I'm going to really quickly race through the screens and workflow. 5 minutes? Okay. Screens and workflow for the system, which I haven't told you the name yet, but it's called the Screening and Immunization System, SIS, because really you have the waiting room and then you have the two big stations, the screening station and the immunization station. So it's really named after those two steps in the process. Okay, station one, receptionist triage. So you can see here that, let me see, do I have a red dot? No red dot. Okay, well, if you see there at the top next to the SIS icon, there's a receptionist icon, a screening icon, and a immunization room icon. So when the receptionist logs in, they click on that icon. That's why the word reception is bolded. And this is the only screen that they see. And all they do is they assign numbers to patients, and they could flag them as being expedited. So if you come in and you're on a breathing machine or something like that, they're going to flag you as expedited. And then in the left sidebar there, you see the patient's numbers and the time they've been waiting. So station two is the screening process. This is by far the longest part of the visit. So the first step is that you select the patient from the waiting room queue. So the screener clicks the screening icon at the top. That's the person with the clipboard and the pen, and that's why the word screening is bolded. So you select the person at the top of the list on the left. It's patient number 6. They've been waiting only 1 minute, but it's red because they're expedited. They're on the breathing machine. So now you're going to search for the patient record, Charlie Brown, date of birth, male. You get the list of search results, and then you can pick which patient you want to work with. And now you're going to review the patient's demographics and update them. And there's 4 tabs there. Right now we're looking at the patient information tab. And then down at the bottom, there's contact information, patient billing information, and information about minors. So that's like their parent and guardian info. So it's like an accordion interface. As you click on it, those expand and collapse. And then you review and update the immunization history. So you don't have to key this in because it's already there. Then SIS makes preliminary vaccine recommendations. So for all 11 of those immunizations or vaccines that I showed you before, it divides them up into 3 categories. They're either initially recommended at the top, you see 6 of them. They're either or not recommended at the bottom, you see 4 of them. Or they're in this gray area in the middle, which requires further analysis and contemplation, which will happen in the subsequent steps. And so the patient, now the screener is looking at this and says verbally to the patient, we're recommending today that you get these following things. And they said, well, I only came here for the flu shot. And then this is at the point where, whatever education training they've received, they're supposed to explain why they should get the things they're supposed to, and then hopefully they check the right check boxes. If they have refused one, they have to explain why they want to refuse it. That's why they're refusing polio, so they selected, is not convinced of the benefit of this vaccine. Now you move on to this screen, the screen for indicators and contraindications. Now, one of the reasons the cycle times decreased is because we only ask the screening questions that are relevant to what you checked on the previous page. So previously you would screen on everything. Now you screen on only those things that need to be screened on. And here the patient has said, yes, I've had a blood transfusion or blood products within the last 11 months. And then you get a follow-up question, okay, select all the components that apply. And then you say, I had packed RBCs or whole blood within the past 6 months. So that's Now, you continue on to the next screen, and now you get the updated recommendations. And I've scrolled down to the bottom here, and you can see the now there's not three categories, there's four categories. At the bottom, you have contraindicated vaccines, right? And it says MMR and varicella. These are vaccines that were checked on your way through. You said, yeah, I'm willing to take these. I only came for flu. The screener talked me into getting MMR and varicella, but then because of my blood transfusion within the last 11 months, I can't get the MMR and varicella. Zero. Okay, I'm out of time. Then the optional vaccines, the precaution vaccines, and above that would have been the recommended vaccines. Then you do, so what I should say is the final list here that comes out of this is the work order. Those are the instructions to the vaccinator. That's the piece of paper, electronic paper, that gets passed into the next room. Now you record the patient's signature and consent, and you have a little thing that's attached to the laptop that is like when you go to the grocery store and you have to sign for your credit cards, the exact same thing. Now you go to the immunization station. Here on the left sidebar, you see the list of patients who are ready for immunizations. Here it's only poor Charlie Brown. You select him. You have two tabs here. On the one tab, you verify the patient's information that you really have the right person in front of you and not someone else. And on the second tab, you have the work order. So it comes loaded up, Hep B, DTP, pneumopolysaccharide, and you select from the drop list what you need to select. The VIS will already be pre-populated because it knows what the VIS sheet is for each vaccine. And the lot and the lot manufacturing expiration date will also be likely pre-populated. And then you just have to choose the injection site or route. And then finally, I'll just mention the dashboard and reports. Here is this situational awareness dashboard. This is actually not what's deployed in production. This is an earlier version. I can't show you what's in production because it has real data, and I can't mock it up for you in the test environment because at midnight the test data goes away. but this, like Dr. Mark Meisner loves this. This is great, you know, because you can see on one screen everything that's going on at all of the clinics. You can see where every patient is in the waiting room, in the screening room, in the ready for vaccinations, in the vaccination room, or if they've completed the encounter. It also tells you the staff member who's working, the name of the staff member who's working with each of those patients. And at the very bottom, what you can't see is it gives you a summary of the total number of patients screened and total number of patients vaccinated on a by staff person basis. So within 1 hour of the 30 minutes of deploying this in production, they already had like five, you know, light bulbs go off in their head about what was going on. So if you have any other further questions or if you want to see a demonstration, we can do a webinar, Mark Meisner or myself. And here's our contact information. And sorry, I went over time.
Thank you, Michael, for that excellent presentation. So now we'll take questions, and I think I need to give this to people who have questions.
In New York, you were talking about the immigration. I was curious if that's a similar issue in Denmark with the patient records and the number when they get into school. Are the parents there? I'm curious how you keep up with the children knowing their ID number and the effects of the immigration if there's a population shift.
Yeah. All immigrants who are granted the who are allowed to stay in Denmark get a personal identification number, just like any other Dane. So it doesn't matter if you're an immigrant or you were born in Denmark. Is that answer enough?
Mike, first, thanks to all the presenters. Great presentations. Mike, is your system, your solution, populates your state registry, or is compatible for populating the national registry for immunizations? I mean, for example, all the states have state registries. Yours is clinics. I mean, it will be, I'm just saying, if you can export this to any other state, we'll have the availability to export the data that is captured to a national registry, for example?
Well, in terms of reusing the software for immunization clinics in other jurisdictions and interacting with those other jurisdictions' immunization registries, whether that's permissible, that the answer is I think yes. I mean, you would have to talk to Amy Matroka, who's the head of the citywide immunization registry, and Dr. Jane Zucker, who's the head of the immunization program for the New York City Department of Health. But this was all custom developed for them. They pay for it, they own it, and they've already always said and recently restated that they're willing to open source anything that would be a share source code with any other jurisdiction. So it would be permissible for any jurisdiction to take the source code and just look at it and examine it if they wanted to get ideas or to try and deploy it. In terms of technically, how easy or hard would that be? There would be probably a fair amount of analysis and then some work that would have to be done to do that, because it is coupled with the CIR database. It's not interacting with it through like a set of just web services. It would have been nice if we could have done that, but for various reasons we couldn't. So there is a fair degree of coupling between the SIS system and the registry.
Thank you.
It's also worth noting that in New York State, the New York Citywide Immunization Registry is separate from the New York State Registry and non-overlapping. New York City really is the 51st state. It has a separate health jurisdiction from the state of New York. There is some data exchange, but it's not bidirectional yet. But really, it's the New York City program is funded by CDC as a grantee, just like a state, as some of the large cities around the country are. So in this case, the clinic system, SIS, that Mike's describing is fully integrated with the citywide registry, like a state might fully integrate its immunization clinics with its state registry. So for all intents and purposes, this is the state registry for New York City, if that makes any sense.
Right, and I should mention too that one of the components of this that's probably pretty interesting in terms of explaining why we were able to increase the number of shots per patient by 25% was that immunization algorithm. Part of the immunization algorithm that deals with making recommendations based on date of birth, gender, and immunization history. Then there's also the screening questions, which we're looking for things like blood transfusion. That's another layer on top of that. That's separate. But the first component that makes recommendations based on date of birth, gender, and immunization history, we're in the middle of a project right now for New York City to convert that into a standalone set of web services that would be very easy to parachute and deploy in another jurisdiction. It's being designed for maximum reuse and maximum sharing, ease of sharing. There's another jurisdiction that's already talking with New York City, participated in one of our meetings about using that system for their recommendations in the future. And there's also an EMR vendor who's very interested in integrating the immunization algorithm for New York City into their software, which New York City is perfectly happy to do. Yeah.
Kind of based on that very topic, does your system then, are the clinics able to generate a list? Because I think the one thing we can agree on, the best way to get people in for vaccines is to actually get them in to get their vaccines. And so you have a really great algorithm that will allow you to see which vaccines they need. Can you generate a list beforehand, say for the month of June, and say, do you know what, I'm going to mail a card to all these kids saying, do you know what, you're due for your vaccines?
Yeah, so I got a lot to say about that. The answer is no. And I guess the reason is because the way that the clinics operate is they're free and they're walk-in. They don't schedule appointments at all. You can't schedule any kind of appointments. And they operate in this kind of reactive mode, right? They want you to have, like, a medical home that's not them. Okay. That's the idea. Okay. Just yesterday, or is it this morning? Just this morning, I checked my email, and I got a message from Dr. Meisner saying, oh, by the way, one of the things that we want to push up on the list in terms of enhancements is the ability to, at the end of the visit, as the patient's walking out, print out a list of, like, here's what you're due for next. This is when you should come back. And I will also mention that the online registry, which is the web-based interface to the, you know, immunization registry for New York City, does have exactly what you're talking about. It has the sophisticated reminder recall feature with the mailing labels and the postcards and the whole nine yards. Of course, now the data that's going in through these BOI clinics are being inserted into that registry, obviously, and so you could use the reminder recall for, you know, from the online registry.
Thank you all for three very interesting presentations. My question's for Denmark as well as for New York City. Do people have the option of being in the registries, or do they have, can they opt out, or is it an opt-in system, or is it an opt-out system? Do they have that option?
Which system do you mean? Do you mean the children's national?
The children's system. Can a parent say, no, I mean, the child's going to get an identification number, perhaps analogous to our Social Security numbers, but does the child have to be enrolled?
Yes, actually, everybody are involved, but not everybody can get access to the data, of course. So you have to have a personal identification number to get access to data, and the most sensitive data, now I'm talking about all the different databases on a national level, the more sensitive data are, the more control is exerted on who are getting access to the data. For instance, you would have to be the person's own physician to get access to certain data. But everybody are in all these national databases.
Yeah, so in New York City, there's two different things. There's the SIS system, which is the clinic EMR software, and then there's the immunization registry. So with regards to the SIS system, clinic EMR. Nobody can opt out of that because that's the only record they have of the services they provided. So children and adult data does go in there and stays in there. In terms of where that data goes into the registry, if you're a child under 18, everything goes into the registry. If you're an adult, then you have to obtain consent. And I flashed that screen up there where you had to sign your life away that, you know, consent for various things. Consent for treatment, consent to be in the registry, et cetera, et cetera. And the system is smart, right? It only asks you for consent if you're an adult. And once you've come on a visit and you've given your consent, on subsequent visits, it doesn't ask for consent again, unless you said no the first time, in which case it will ask you again and again on subsequent visits until you say yes. With the registry, oh, the one exception is H1N1 vaccine. There was a determination from above that if H1N1 was administered to adults, that would go into the registry regardless of whether the adult opted in or not. So it's mandatory for children and it's opt-in for adults with the exception of H1N1.
I have a couple of questions for New York City. Did I understand you to say that all the providers in New York City were mandated to participate in registry?
Yes, they're mandated to report immunizations for children under 18 to the citywide immunization registry, and there were a couple mechanisms for doing that. They used to be able to do it by paper. They are no longer able to do that. They could either use, there's three interfaces right now. There's the online registry that I keep talking about, which is a web-based application. There's these proprietary flat file format that they will accept, like an export from your EMR system or something. And more recently, they have an HL7 2.3.1 interface with real-time bidirectional exchange, which is really cool.
Do you know how that mandate came about?
Do I know how that...
The mandate came about for private providers to participate in registry?
Sue,
that was a Board of Health regulation. Philadelphia also has one because it's not under the state.
New York City Board of...
New York City Board of Health, for example, the Philadelphia Board of Health has a similar regulation.
Okay.
That the doctors have to be board.
Okay.
Yeah, I knew it was a regulation, but I just didn't know how it came, like if what the sequence of events was to mm-hmm. cause that to come about. If anyone had to lobby for it or anything like that.
Ones are legislated by the legislature, but yeah. The local ones are Board of Health regulations.
Okay. And why did these immunization clinics start at age 5 rather
why
than...
Why did it start at age 4?
Mm-hmm. Or 4, I'm sorry. Do you know?
I do not know the answer to that. I will have to, if you give me your contact information,
A curiosity.
Yeah. So they do not give rotavirus vaccine because they don't see children under 4. I don't know what the origin of that requirement is.
Are there any other questions? If not, I'd like to thank all our presenters and, and remind everybody, to fill out your conference applications. Thanks. Or not evaluations.
I'm sorry, I thought of a question for myself. I was watching Dr. Fry's presentation about the pneumococcal polysaccharide, and you were showing how the uptake didn't really happen the way you expected when you went from paper to EMR. So I'm thinking, okay, well, how did we get this 25% boost? And so the first thing I'm going to do when I go home is try and break down our numbers by vaccine type. Because I don't know which vaccines we had a greater uptake in and which ones we didn't. I'm wondering if maybe we didn't have as much of an uptake in pneumococcal polysaccharide if we kind of mirrored the same experience that you had. Because we do have indicator questions just like you do about, you know, smoking and whatnot. But we didn't analyze the data in that manner. But we will.
I think, too, that you're dialed in. When you're looking at an immunization clinic, you're dialed in to immunizations. That's their goal. That's their only goal. So in the hospital setting, it's quite different because they have all this multifaceted stuff coming at them, and the nurses felt like, really, that immunizations were the least of their worries. Their patients were sick. So they say, they're sick. We don't have time for this. Let them get their immunizations elsewhere. But unfortunately, some of those patients, the only time they encounter the health system is when they come into the hospital already ill. So we're missing opportunities, and we should never miss an opportunity to immunize. So.